0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110100 0110 I don't think I'm speaking in the correct language with everybody here. Well, I know my brother-in-law understood most of what I said. Of course, he is a Jedi master of programming, and I'm merely a Padawan. Well, the dialect I'm speaking that he understands, yeah, I doubt he understood. I don't even understood what I couldn't pick it out if I heard it again. But it's called binary. And the word that I just said, speaking in binary, was truth. Well, thankfully, we don't have to speak binary, as it would take a very, very long time to say very little. And that was what I just said. It was only five letters, and each letter takes eight numbers, and it would take quite a long time to get really anything said if we use that. But binary is the most fundamental level of communication that a computer speaks, something that we probably all do use. You know, it's simply, binary that is simply a set of true and false statements, zero being false or equaling no, and one equaling true or yes. Now, Wikipedia defines a binary system as a numerical system that represents numeric values using two symbols, usually 0 and 1. More specifically, the usual base 2 system is a positional notation with a radix of 2. Owing to its straightforward implementation in digital electronic circuitry using logic gates, the binary system is used internally by all modern computers. Now, I've just elevated everybody to nerd level 3 by saying that. You don't have to understand what I just said. And if I go much higher, I'll have to speak in Klingon, which does actually exist as a language, even a spoken language, as I found on the internet, and of course I don't speak it. I did test somebody today, and based upon his response, I think he may speak it. Terry, I said something in Klingon, and he gave me an interesting look, and I will interpret that as that he understood everything, so you could talk to him later about his Klingon language knowledge. He does speak after me, so I should be careful. Well, the binary system, with its series of zeros and ones, as I demonstrated, is the foundation of almost all electronic devices that we use today. You know, the method in which the binary system function is called a logic system named Boolean logic. It's named after a man who kind of invented that many, many years ago. And if you have taken a true and false test at any time, then you understand what Boolean logic is. There's only two options, true or false. Well, the computers that we have, that we're all using, don't even understand what zeros and ones are. You know, how a computer sees Boolean logic and how it understands those zeros and ones are through transistors. Now, transistors are small gates, in essence. When the current is applied to one, they are either opened or they're closed. And that's pretty much what determines if it's open, it's true, if it's false, it's closed. And that's how a computer reads and understands the logic. Well, the computers that we are using, even up here at the broadcast services, have upwards and even over 200 million of these transistors. And if you add, you know, the newer and faster things, it even gets exponentially more than that. And if you add more transistors, the logic that a computer uses becomes increasingly more complex. You know, the simple yes and no, the simple true and false gates that I just mentioned become much more intricate. And words to describe what these gates start doing, and as they get more advanced, are words like and, or, but, if, while, and when. And an example would be, you know, drive 90 when the police are not behind you, but drive 65 when the police are behind you. Well, even with the increased complexity that we see with CPUs, you know, the computer and everything we do, the computer still sees everything it does in zeros and ones. It's us, it's humans who program computers to do more than that. Well, today I want to talk to us all about programming. You know, I've recently started going back to school to finish off my degree, and instead of trying to finish off as a poet, which I initially started years ago, I decided to put my efforts into computer science degree, which really didn't exist when I first went to school. It was, there were classes, but it didn't have the same level it does today. And besides, it's something that can actually benefit my family while I'm alive, as most poets find their success when they're dead. Well, today, as I'm learning about programming, I'd like to make us all good programmers. It won't require learning any Klingon. And, of course, that would help. So I'll start off. Hija is yes, and Gobe is no in Klingon. That is adding to your nerd level a little bit. We will rank up that level quite, or ratchet up quite high today. Well, what do programmers do? You know, other than, like I said, learning Klingon, drinking Mountain Dew, and hacking into mainframes, programmers write algorithms to solve problems. That's the whole reason to write a program, to do something, to solve something, to perform a task, to, you know, like I said, solve a problem. In essence, a small program would be, does the van start? That's false. Is the battery dead in the van? That's true. Has the van been driven over 90 miles an hour by a German/Californian? True. The van is dead. Well, no matter how complex the task, I didn't say it was you, Misha. It may have been. No matter how complex the task of a program might be, whether it's turning your computer on, checking your email, surfing the web, at the computer's core, many thousands and hundreds of thousands of zeros and ones are being looked at and used. Well, the real complexity, then, comes not in what we ask that computer to do, but in the programming we build upon that computer. In essence, the computer sees only yes and no at its core. We introduce the concept of maybe, of those other terms I used. You know, we all lived through that horrific, life-changing time of Y2K, right? You know, unless you were one of those poor programmers that were rewriting millions of lines of code that needed to be changed, you probably didn't notice much of an impact. Well, that was probably one of the better-known bugs that have transpired, you know, in this current computer era, as short as it has been. And that wasn't necessarily malicious. It wasn't designed so that the machines would take over the world, as many of the level 11, which we won't get near any more, level 11 nerds might have been hoping for. It was simply an oversight in programming. You know, people didn't design those programs to fail. They just failed. You know, because the problems that did arise of that date problem, people didn't even think about. Well, how many of us have been affected by bad programming in the past? You know, maybe it's some non-malicious problem with your operating system. Maybe it's spyware or a virus that has been transferred onto your computer that may be invasive or something that is trying to do you harm. Well, both of those examples stem from bad programming. You know, when a program is written, it's in essence written in a vacuum, so to speak. A programmer can take every precaution that they possibly can take upon themselves to make sure that their code, what they have written for that program to do, is good. But until that code goes out into the world, until it's released to the public, it's difficult to test all the possible variables and to know in which areas and which situations their code will actually make it. And of course, if we use Microsoft products, you know it's us, the public, that does all of their testing. Well, although programs are written in sorts of a vacuum, they aren't really designed to stay there. You know, they can run perfect, they can run without problems in that incubator, so to speak, but when they release to the public, when they make their way out, as they are designed to do, problems can arise. You know, programs are meant to be exposed to many different conditions. And good programs hold up and function at anything that's thrown at them. Well, you know, the same internet that we proclaim God's message on, that we're broadcasting live today, can also be an utter cesspool of filth. You know, that by itself can't limit it as a vehicle that we use to proclaim God's message. The apostles preached to people who needed to hear God's gospel, who needed to hear his message of the soon coming kingdom. And it was the Pharisees that were offended by Christ and his apostles that they would keep company with who they kept company with. Well, you know, the key was that Christ used good code. What he preached and what he put out into the public domain held up to all of the abuse, all of the naysayers that and the ideas that were thrown against it. It was so good that it even changed those who came in contact with it. Well, good code, then, is the key for us to continue to go out and preach a strong message to the world, including the vehicle we use of the Internet. Well, you know, most here probably wouldn't consider themselves great programmers. And it wasn't really until recently that I could understand and look at what Eric was doing and understand some of the code that he uses. But, you know, the people in this room, all of us that have taken God's Spirit, all of his brethren around the world, actually are some of the best programmers in the world. You know, maybe it's not with PCs, but we are adept at programming the ultimate computer that resides between our ears. You know, not all of us might be running quad-core processors between our ears, but we still possess something vastly superior to anything that mankind has come up with. You know, what we do to our computer to program it sometimes is not normal. You know, throwing it against the wall to try to fix it doesn't always show a good effect. I won't mention names, but Joe does have a new computer, which I'm worried may be fixed by him again. Well, this ability to program, as he has demonstrated, doesn't come naturally. You know, mankind has been trying to get programs to run correctly in our brains since Adam was put on this earth, and without much luck. The key that makes us good programmers is the language that we use to program in. You know, with a language we could call God's Word, version 1.0. And it's at 1.0 still because it was written perfectly the first time it was published. The only way that we can make our brains work as they were intended to, that we can make these machines function as they are meant to, is by using that correct language that we all have been given, that we all carry with us in the form of the Bible. You know, God didn't intend for us to run the complex machine that we are all born with by our own hacked-together software, by our own methods, so to speak. He wanted us to use his code, and his code we were supposed to rely on alone. You know, it's only then that we can expect to run these machines that we all possess without those typical errors that we see programs, that we see the computers we use always show up with. So what then can we do to become better programmers? You know, with God's Spirit, we have the understanding and we have the ability to write using this code that we all carry around with us in this Bible. But we still seem to have problems making that code run smoothly. None of us are running at 100%. You know, it's no matter how much we try to inculcate God's code into our minds, it seems that we always find errors from Satan's influence breaking into it. breaking down that code, destroying what we have built up. We use the example of programming on a PC. There are some general guidelines that we can use that I think will help us to improve our coding and our programming skills. Now, just last night, I turned in an assignment for one of the classes, the computer classes I take, which took 20 to 30 hours to complete. Now, when I initially looked at the assignment, it seemed quite overwhelming. It seemed almost an impossible task. Well, the first step that I had to take was to get an overall picture of what I needed to accomplish. You know, once I understood what it was I had to do as a general outline, I could then break that problem into smaller parts and begin working on those. You know, as I worked through that program using and completing each section of it, I tested those sections, made sure they were running as they should, and added them to the main program. And when all those smaller parts were completed, I put them all together and the program ran as it was supposed to. You know, the way that we program and that we have to work and build upon ourselves is not much different. We have this Bible, and it's vast in what the code that it contains and in the descriptions it shows of how we're supposed to program ourselves. We must understand what it means to follow God to begin with. We have to understand the overall picture, which I think we do, that He is what this Bible means to us. You know, it's quite difficult to just use the term, like, I'm going to follow God completely, as the first problem you try to embark on in your lives, when you're first called, even. And my grandfather used to say, when he was talking about child rearing, that don't try to fix a kid all at once. Start with the one problem that you see they might have and work on that one until it's solved, and then move on to the next. You know, we really aren't too much different. We are all children in God's eyes, and it does make it easier to start on a small section of our code and try to get that worked on. You know, if our intent is to become like God in a week or to concurrently fix our top 20, 30, or 40 problems, we might be setting ourselves up for failure. It's going to be quite difficult to look at that huge task and to just jump in and complete it. But it might be more practical to work on a single problem. You know, it might take a lifetime to overcome, you know, just a single instance of something. But starting with just one problem and going from there is a start. What I point out is that it's specifics that we must work on in ourselves, with our coding, with our programming. And once you do, the general direction that we do want to follow, that we do want to get into, will come and fall into place. Well, I guess the question now is, how do we put that into practice? Well, as I said earlier, at their core, computers use zeros and ones to communicate. It's us, humans, that add in the maybes. Well, God is very similar in how He communicates with us. I'll cite a few scriptures here for you. In Matthew 5:37, we read, "But let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one." And citing as well James 5:2, "But above all, my brethren, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth, or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes, and your no, no, lest you fall into judgment." Swearing, as that was talking about, meant that your yes and that your no didn't really mean what they meant, what you said. There needed to be something more substantial to back up a simple yes or no. And obviously, that's not how God communicates, nor does He want us to communicate with each other. God's word is the definition of truth. I'll cite a few other scriptures. In Psalms 119, verse 160, read, "The entirety of your word is truth, and every one of your righteous judgments endures forever." In John 17:17, we read, "Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth." I'm shotgunning these quick, so you don't have to turn all through with me if you don't want to. In James 1:8, we also read of this same idea Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. When God speaks, he speaks in one way, and he speaks in truth. There is no false gate in what God speaks. There is no middle ground of coulds, of would haves, and maybes when God speaks. He simply is in a state of truth. And the absence of God, in a Boolean sense at least, is the state of false. You know, God is so far removed from that state of falsehood that the Father, when Christ had the sins of the world placed upon him, which was, you know, the opposite, I've said, of God, that he had to remove himself from Christ. And we all are familiar with that cry that Christ gave out when he was dying, that, my God, why have you forsaken me? God could not be part of Christ at that point because God always is in a state of truth. You know, the code that he has written, that perfect code for us to live by as well, is always in a state of truth. There is no falsehood in that code. You know, what we can learn from his programming techniques, speaking of God, can help us to write his code in our minds and our hearts. I want to look at an example of God using and trying to program humans with his words and his laws. And I want to follow some of the story of Exodus with Israel. And if you will, turn with me to Exodus 12 and we'll begin. I'll try to touch on some of the parts of this Exodus and how God was working with Israel. In Exodus 12, starting in verse 5, "Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight." In verse 7, "And they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts, on the lintel of the houses where they eat." And skipping down to verse 11, "And thus you shall eat it, with a belt in your waist, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. So you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord." In verse 13, "Now the blood shall be a sign for you in the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt." This was instituting the Passover, and at this point, it was a yes and no answer. It was a yes and no test for Israel. Either there is blood or there isn't. Either there is death or there isn't. God was setting up a first example of to train Israel in following him. Later in chapter 13 and in verse 17, talking about another example in God trying to train Israel. "Then it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt." And skipping to verse 20, "So they took their journey from Succoth and camped in Etham at the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night." And 22, "And he did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people." Again, God is showing that his presence was with them the entire time, that he was in a state of truth. He did not leave. There was no false of God not being part of them. He was always with them at that point. And later, in another example of trying to train Israel, in chapter 14, starting in verse 19,
And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud went from before them and stood behind them. So it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. Thus it was a cloud and darkness to the one, and it gave light by night to the other, so that the one did not come near the other all that night. And to 21, then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand, on their left. And in verse 26, then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, on their chariots and on their horsemen. And down in verse 30, so the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. And what we were seeing in those three instances is that it was a verification that God was in fact with Israel, that he was in fact protecting them. You know, it was blood on the door, no blood on the door. God leading Israel constantly, and God with Israel when they were crossing, and obviously not with Egypt when they were, because he removed his hand that stayed those waters and drowned them. Well, another test that God used, if we will continue in chapter 15 of Exodus 22, it's the instance when he made drinkable water for them. In 22, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, then they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Then when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. When he cast into the waters were made sweet. There he made a statute and ordinance for them, and there he tested them. And this is one of the first tests. God had programmed Israel into believing that he was with them, and basically wrote code into their hearts and minds, and now he wanted to test some of that code to see how well Israel would follow it. And in verse 16, or chapter 16, I'm sorry, in verse 1, and they journeyed from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day on the second month after they departed the land of Egypt. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we have died by the hand of the Lord, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord of in the land of Egypt, and we sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate the bread to be full. For now you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven to you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. And later we read 27. Now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to the gather, but they found none. Again, God is testing Israel, and many of them obviously failed what he had coded into their hearts to believe in him. And another example in 16, same chapter in verse 9, when they were fighting Amalek. Verse 9. Then Moses spoke to Aaron, say to all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your complaints. Now it came to pass, as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. I'm sorry, I was reading. We'll skip over to 17. Well, basically, it's the victory that God gave by showing that Moses holding the rod over his hand or his head. When the rod was held high, the battle was won. When the rod fell,
the battle was lost. Again, God tested Israel to see what they would do in that situation. You know, God is showing and was showing Israel that his presence was a state of true. It was valid in their lives. There was no falsehood in what he was doing for them. And as we see, they quite often failed to inculcate that code into their practices. You know, with these laws, he was reintroducing to Israel. He was also testing to see if those laws were sticking, if they were actually being used. The examples of his presence was building up for Israel to see and to be conscious of. You know, in Exodus 23, we read about promises of what God is going to do if, and that's a big question, if Israel was going to follow him. In verse 20, behold, of 23, chapter 23, behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way that to bring you to the place which I have prepared. Beware of him and obey his voice. Do not provoke him, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if you indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. For my angel will go before you and bring you into the Amorites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Canaanites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I will cut them off. You shall not bow down to their gods nor serve them, nor do according to their works. But you shall utterly overthrow them and completely break down their sacred pillars. You shall serve the Lord your God, and he will bless you. Bless your bread and your water, and I will take sickness away from the midst of you. No one shall suffer miscarriages or be barren in your land. I will fulfill the number of your days. I will send my fear before you. I will cause confusion among all the people to whom you come, and will make your enemies turn their backs to you. And 32, and you shall make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you. Now, the promises for what Israel would receive if they wrote God's, or these words, you know, if they actually wrote his code into their hearts. And as we see, you know, time and time again, they just didn't seem to really take that seriously. We read also in 24, that Moses going up to Mount Sinai, and in essence affirming this is the first covenant God made with them. And he made that after, when he was ready, based upon the, in 23, that he was going to bless Israel if they followed his covenant. He gave them the Ten Commandments that he wrote by his hand. And we read in 32, after we go over some of those ordinances, what Israel did. This was God putting his code, what he had written, after he had tested them, into practice, letting it go out and be run. Exodus 32 and verse 1. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, come, make us gods that we should go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And in verse 4, and he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool, and made a molded cap. Then they said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And in verse 7, and the Lord said to Moses, go, get down, for your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I command them. They have made themselves a molded cap and worshipped it and sacrificed to it. And said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. They're quickly forgetting the code that they've just been programmed with. And in verse 19, so it was, as soon as he came near the camp, Moses, that is, that he saw the calf,
and the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. Then he took the calf which they had made, burned it in the fire, and ground it to powder, and he scattered it in the water, and made the children of Israel drink of it. And later in 31, then Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Oh, these people have committed a great sin and have made for themselves a god of gold. Yet now, if you will forgive their sin, but if not, I pray, blot me out of your book which you have written." And the Lord said to Moses, "Whoever has sinned against me, I will blot him out of my book. Now, therefore, go, lead the people to the place which I have spoken to you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day which I visit for punishment, I will visit punishment upon them for their sin." So the Lord plagued the people because of what they did with the calf which Aaron made. You know, that initial promise in chapter 23, they didn't use that code correctly, and they were plagued because after that. You know, it wasn't God, but Israel that crashed the code that God was writing into their minds. Israel was who corrupted that code. And we see, once again, God had to put another version of code into their minds in chapter 34 when new tablets are made. 34 verse 1 we read, "And the Lord said to Moses, cut two tablets of stone like the first ones, and I will write on these tablets the words that were on the first tablets which you broke." And in verse 4, "So he cut two tablets of stone like the first ones. Then Moses rose early in the morning and went up to Mount Sinai as the Lord had commanded him, and he took in his hand the two tablets. Now the Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord." And in verse 9, "Then he said, if now I have found grace in your sight, O Lord, let my Lord, I pray, go among us, even though we are stiff-necked people, and pardon our iniquity and our sin, and take us as your inheritance." You know, God did renew his covenant with Israel. He cleaned up and removed some of that faulty hardware that wasn't working with his code, to the tune of about 3,000 people that Moses went out and slayed with a sword, had Aaron's people slay with a sword. And yet Israel continued, even after this, to run the code, but not as God had given it to them, but from their own interpretations, from their own perspective. And this continued, as we read throughout the history of Israel in the Bible, to cause great problems. You know, what we see here and later in Israel's history is an unwillingness to run that code. It's quite clear what God has wanting them to run, what he has provided for them. But what it is clear is they just weren't willing to inculcate it, to make it part of their lives. Israel started injecting maybes which would not run in unison with God's truths. God's code can only truly be written into our minds if he and he alone is the author of it. When we start injecting our own so-called truths, you know, we add to them, thinking, you know, maybe it adds to what our, you know, God's writing, but instead it displaces, it removes God from our minds. If you will, turn with me to Romans 1:18. So that we should never think of ourselves as better programmers than God. Romans 1, verse 18. "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools." We are not better programmers than God. We must use that code that he gives us
to make our machines, our brains, work as they're supposed to. You know, by suppressing truth, which is God, we end up running this machine in a state that's simply foolish. I'd have you turn to 1 John 4. Eric sunk my battleship dead on. I will read and reiterate what I want to take from these six scriptures. In verse 1 of chapter 4, in 1 John, "Beloved, not believe every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world." And in verse 6, "We are of God. He who knows God hears us. He who is not of God does not hear us. But this we know, the spirit of truth, or by this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error." You know, testing what we are writing to our hardware is critical for us to becoming close to God. If we aren't putting His truth into our code, the only other option, as we read in verse 6, is error. That's all that we are going to come up with on our own when we try to code and program ourselves without God's direct influence. You know, God is continually testing us, making sure His code will continue to run in our machines. And once He is sure of it, which may take our entire lives, He can add us to this greater program that He is building, which can be called the Book of Life. It can be called His God family. Well, computers have become a focus for this generation, and it's hard to even imagine our lives without them today. You know, speaking of the development of the computer processor, it's said that if the automobile industry was on that same technological track for speed increases as we see with CPUs, that we would be driving from Tucson to Denver in 3 seconds and from Tucson to San Diego in 2 seconds. You know, the computer industry grows almost exponentially on a yearly basis. And yet, with all that growth, with all that power that we continually see, it still not cannot compete with the organic simplicity that God created out of a pile of dirt. You know, this pile of dirt can only work correctly when it is run with God's Spirit as it has been designed. You know, the simplicity of yes and no, of true and false, must be the basis of what we are writing into our code on a daily, weekly, and yearly time frame. Doubt, maybes, could be, should have done's are all considered bad coding, and they will not stand the test of time. You know, having the presence of something is a state of true. The absence of something is a state of being untrue. So, brethren, let us strive to keep God's presence in our lives and keep and stay in that state of true. You know, as Eric even mentioned, you know, it's because we became a fool of this world, become a fool of this world, but to be wise is with God's truth. And I will leave you with a term you can use. It's Jija. 0101010100100100100111001. And if you happen to come across a Star Trek convention, it will make you doubly important, because not only will you be able to tell them that you understand, which that word means in Klingon, but you'll be able to tell them in binary and use not only computers but Star Trek as a true ticket to be a geek.